Maryland is a state that loves its seafood. Any mention of the Old Line State usually is followed by references to our love of steamed crabs and the iconic seasoning that goes with them. Harvested from the beautiful Chesapeake Bay, it's easy to forget about another delicacy from these waters, oysters. So let's talk shellfish on Majestic Maryland. Stretching 200 miles from the mouth of the Susquehanna River down to where it meets the Atlantic Ocean at the tip of the Virginia Peninsula, it's quite the impressive body of water. The watershed that feeds it covers 64,000 square miles of territory, the furthest point north being about Cooperstown, New York State. There's about 100,000 rivers and streams across a massive area where close to 18 million people call home and a habitat to thousands of different species of flora and fauna. Avian friends like ospreys, bald eagles, and herons hunt the waters and shores for fish and other game. There are all kinds of furry and scaly critters who call the shores, swamps, and marshes around the bay home, from beavers, otters, snakes, hellbenders, which is a type of giant salamander. But it's the numerous types of fish, crustaceans, and shellfish that the bay is known for. Around 500 million pounds of seafood are harvested each year, according to the Chesapeake Bay Foundation. And that industry brings in about $540 million annually and provides work for around 30,000 people in Maryland and Virginia. Fishing has been a way of life on the bay for generations, going back to the various indigenous peoples who originally called this land home for well over 10,000 years. Now, second to blue crabs, oysters are probably one of the most important things harvested from the bay. If you haven't heard about the Chesapeake Oyster Wars, I can't blame you. I hadn't either until just recently, while doing research for the Inlet episode. And I'm surprised I haven't sooner, or just the only time I saw it, I was probably on a school field trip to Annapolis in middle school or something, and just completely forgot. So it all started in 1794. The newly found states of Maryland and Virginia were trying to figure out what to do concerning fishing rights in the bay and its tributaries along the borders. Things were fine at first until folk began to get greedy with it, and problems escalated as the market for oysters grew. First was the introduction of dredge fishing. It was a highly efficient method involving scraping a large metal basket or rake along the floor of the bay. In fact, far too efficient because it vastly favored those that could afford it over local fishermen who had to rely on older methods of harvesting. A lot of these wealthier fishermen came from out of state as well. After depleting oyster beds where they had come from, they moved into the fertile waters of the Chesapeake. The act of dredging causes a lot of damage to the sensitive ecosystem of the bay, destroying oyster beds that help keep the waters clean and thriving with other life. This became a huge problem to the fishing industry. This inequality caused a very dangerous situation for everyone, and it became a bit of an arms race in the waters of the Chesapeake. Fishermen from out of state would dredge in areas usually farmed by smaller local fishermen, who traditionally used older methods that were less invasive and damaging to the environment. Now, more often than not, these local fishermen were usually freed blacks and immigrants trying to make a living in a very difficult world. And these dredgers were not helping in the least. The poaching and fighting became heated even as Maryland and Virginia state governments tried to impose some form of order. Folk acted pretty horribly to each other, and it was already a dangerous enough way to make a living. This led to poaching by both parties in the waters, and the poaching led to violence, more often than not. Fishing in the Chesapeake was dangerous enough. You could find yourself kidnapped and forced to work on a boat for long hours, only to be stranded somewhere miles from where they nabbed you with no pay or supplies. If you got really unlucky, you could find yourself thrown overboard in the middle of the bay. They called this paying the boom. So a special unit of highly skilled agents was put together called the State Oyster Police. This precursor to the Natural Resource Police was created in the 1860s to protect Maryland's waters and bring justice to poachers. It was better known as the Oyster Navy, and they weren't really super effective at stopping poaching. Which is sad, because the officers who joined were giving nice incentive, usually their own boat, freedom to purchase whatever weapons they could strap onto a schooner. Even the first commander of this shellfish-focused navy, the appropriately named Hunter David, really wanted to show they were serious. This former Civil War vet purchased a massive howitzer cannon for the fleet's main ship in an effort to show that he meant business. However, a big gun wasn't enough to deter poachers. Virginia tried the same thing as well to mixed effect, and it stayed a problem into the 20th century, with the practice of dredging continuing to cause damage to the bay year after year. For Marylanders, one of the biggest environmental concerns we have is the health of the bay, and for very good reason, of course. This estuary provides so much, from employment to recreation to inspiration, and I personally find it great that we as a state decided a sea monster would be the perfect mascot for our cause of keeping the bay clean. Chessie is one of Maryland's many, from employment to recreation to inspiration, and I personally find it great that we as a state decided a sea monster would be the perfect mascot for our cause of keeping the bay clean. Chessie is one of Maryland's many cryptozoological residents, part modern folktale, part environmentalist call to action. Chessie is named after the Loch Ness Monster of Loch Ness fame. And most sightings describe it as being very similar in appearance, a long serpentine body, few describable features, and possibly flippers or fins, but some describe it as being hairy, like an otter. One of the earliest modern sightings that's on record is from 1934, when two perch fishermen, and every source I find always states that they are perch fishermen, because there's probably only one report, but that's okay. Fishing for perch. This is somehow important. So, these guys are fishing somewhere in the water outside Baltimore, and out from the depths, a thing arises, looks at them for a moment, and then slips back under the water. Their story spread, and from then on, we get many more sightings throughout the years. The monster appears to be mostly docile. Of course, most sightings are reported from the shore, and a couple from helicopters, so take that with a grain of salt. It's at least non-threatening, which is probably fine. As far as Maryland cryptids go, it's definitely one of the nicer ones. The other two most people think of, the Dweyo and the Snallygaster, are closer to monsters from a Godzilla movie. One's a massive bear-wolf hybrid, and the other's a flying snake that wants your blood, and they are rivals. But Chessie seems pretty chill. In fact, one of the most likely candidates for the true identity of this mysterious creature is the pretty relaxed Florida manatee. In October of 1994, a manatee was rescued from the cold waters of the bay, and one was found just having a little vacation, as you do. And actually, it's not too uncommon, though still pretty rare, for manatees to swim north from their warmer homes, and a few have been tagged and tracked, taking little adventures up the Atlantic coast, some reaching as far north as Rhode Island. But of course, there are still plenty of folks who are pretty sure what they saw wasn't a manatee, because it certainly doesn't look like one. In fact, some of the only supposed footage convinced biologists at the Smithsonian to take a look at it, because, you know, science. Now, real or not, Chessie, like most cryptids, has gained a following. And in Chessie's case, since the 1980s, this lovable bay serpent has served as sort of an ecological mascot, and famously appearing as a main character in a children's coloring book used to teach youngsters the importance of our state's estuary and waterways. The Chesapeake is one of our most valuable resources here in Maryland. It has been a source of progress, growth, strife and success, and wonder. And boy, has it gone through a lot. The success of Baltimore's industrial might in the 19th century and the expanding of populations through its watershed and the fishing industry have all taken their toll. Some of the worst pollution takes the form of algae blooms, an overabundance of nitrates in the water, all from various sources such as runoff from agriculture and industry. These dead zones, as they are called, absolutely decimate any aquatic environment they occur in, killing fish, crabs, and, of course, oysters. All vital resources that we depend on just as much as the bay does itself. A loss of aquatic life in the bay circles back to harm the very people who depend on it for their livelihoods. Pollution, combined with overfishing, has been devastating to the oyster population of the bay, and these little fellows are one of the keys to keep everything staying imbalanced. Imbalance. The oyster is responsible for keeping the waters of the bay clean. Colonies of oysters filter thousands of gallons of water in a single day, and also provide food for just about everyone. Other mollusks, crustacean, fish, birds. Heck, Chessy, in theory, would probably feed on something that requires a healthy oyster population. The health of the bay has long been a major issue. Since the overall push to clean up heavily polluted areas of the country in the middle of the 20th century sort of started in the bay. Efforts to keep it safe have been spearheaded by organizations like the Chesapeake Bay Program, who have been instrumental in helping to preserve the health of the bay and its surrounding ecosystems, advocating for better legislation on sources of pollution and reining in overfishing. Since the 1980s, they have established several agreements with state and federal governments to reduce the overall impact that we all have on the health of the bay. Efforts such as better agricultural practices that reduce the amount of chemicals and sediment runoff into the watershed, and the push to reestablish oyster beds in critical areas of the bay, are all helping to lessen our impact on this precious natural resource. The fight to bring back oysters has been helped by the restoration of previously compromised habitats and establishment of sanctuaries, slowly but surely getting oyster populations back to a sustainable amount. So this Thanksgiving, fry up some oysters and crab cakes, and give thanks to this amazing natural wonder.